WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Good afternoon, ladies and gents. Yes, 1 o'clock has rolled around once again. As always, I'm your host, Al Martin, and welcome to Current Sports on this October, lovely October 17th, 2013. You got to put a smile on, even though it's rainy out there. Got to always keep an optimistic mood, all right? We have another mind-blowing, earth-shattering show in store for you all today. We'll be taking your calls throughout the entire show on what you thought of the Tigers' performance last night and Jim Leland's shakeup of the Tigers' lineup. Yes, it seemed to work to perfection, and I can tell you, it definitely turned my head, I tell you that. Now, call us at 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. And share your thoughts. In doing so, you will automatically be entered into our drawing for your chance to win two MSU Purdue football tickets for this Saturday's game. Again, that's 517-355-9527. Give your thoughts on the Tigers, folks. Also want to give a shout-out to all of those who came out to last night's taping of Current Sports TV as I sat down with former MSU basketball player turned high school coach for Lansing Sexton, high school basketball coach that is for Lansing Sexton High School, and father to MSU's basketball player Denzel and former Oakland basketball player Drew. Yes, Carlton Valentine, join me. Thanks to all of you who showed up last night. Congrats to Riley, who won our Current Sports TV drawing of football tickets last night. Her and a friend will be enjoying this Saturday's MSU-Purdue football game. See what you miss out by not showing up to our Wednesday night tapings. All right, it's always a fun time. Come on out, folks. Well, let's get this party started. Today, I have the pleasure of welcoming a man who was named Big Ten Offensive Player of the Week last week. On the national scene, he was also named to the College Soccer News National Team of the Week on Monday. Yes, he's pretty good, and so is his team. MSU men's soccer player Adam Montague. How you doing, Adam?
Not too bad. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you for coming on the show. Really appreciate your time. So I got to tell you, man, that's a pretty big honor. Your first honor of that sort when you talk about Big Ten Offensive Player of the Week. I mean, what was going through your head when you heard about being named Big Ten Offensive Player of the Week last week?
It's a cool honor. I think I just saw a tweet or something, and it wasn't like I was, you know, given a call or anything. So I just kind of brushed through my Twitter feed and saw it. And, you know, it's pretty cool to see that, especially, you know, on a national stage. But getting stuff like that, you know, it's fun and stuff, but you know, that kind of stuff comes when you have big wins and your team's, you know, being successful.
Found out through Twitter. Twitter just rules the world now. That's how
it does, yeah, definitely. Things,
right? Now, I'll tell you, how would you describe your progress as a player, Adam? I mean, you're a junior now. It seems as though, I mean, I've been following you. It seems as though you're getting better and better year after year after year. I mean, what do you attest to that?
I would say just, you know, being consistent. I'd say, getting in the system, being more comfortable with the guys, the coaches, that kind of thing. I'd say it's, you know, just being comfortable and that kind of thing. I would probably say as a freshman and even a sophomore, I would have some good games and have some bad games, but I'd say, you know, especially this year, I've been pretty confident from the get-go, and I think just putting a good string of games together.
Now, I got to ask you about your coach, Damian Rensing, who's done an incredible job with this team, through the years. I mean, what has he told you specifically to work on your game and improve you as an individual player and as a team player?
I'd say they just say focus on the small things. You know, don't try to make a huge pass or, you know, try to dribble a ton of people. Just, you know, focus on, you know, doing the small things right, and, you know, the bigger plays and scoring goals, that kind of stuff will come with it.
Now, I got to go back in time for a minute. Now, Adam, you bounced a header into the net of the final minute of double overtime to earn a win at number 5 Northwestern last week, helping the Spartans improve to 7-1-1 at that time on the season. I mean, how cool was that moment? I mean, it had to be a lot of – I mean, you had to just go nuts, right? Did you take off the shirt and just go crazy?
I went nuts, yeah. I took off my shirt, which, you know, I kind of joked with my roommate. I become a different person when I score a goal. You know, if you talk to me, you wouldn't, you know, expect me to do that kind of thing. But when I score a goal, I become a completely different person. It was a pretty special goal. It was actually – both my older brothers live in Chicago, so they were in attendance. My whole family was pretty much there. It was my mom's birthday, too.
Oh, wow. Yeah, what a birthday present.
Exactly. So I scored the goal, jumped over the barrier, and went and said happy birthday and give her a kiss.
Was that probably the most memorable goal that you've had so far?
Personally, yes. I it's almost, you know, equal to the Big Ten championship goal last year, you know, that was scored. Just the emotions that were, you know, coming through me, it's hard to explain, really.
Now, I got to ask you, Adam, I never asked a soccer player this, but in soccer, it seems as though every time a big goal happens, the first thing you guys do is take off the shirt. What's up with taking off the shirt? Is that like some what is that?
It's the only time you can do it. I mean, if in overtime, it's the only time you can take off your shirt. You know, you take your shirt off during the game, you get a yellow card. So, I mean, I kind of have dreamed, you know, ever since I started my career here, I want to score an overtime goal and I want to take my shirt off. So I just
why
you know,
though? What is that? How did that start? Taking off the
what
shirt.
Other sport, you know, what other sport, does, you know, does it? You know, you're not seeing a football player rip off his jersey when he scores a touchdown or anything. You know, it's a soccer-specific thing. So
right.
It's kind of just what I've dreamed about, and I finally had the opportunity, and
just
I ran
the
with
thing
it.
To do. Just the thing to do.
It's the thing to do, yeah.
Dig that, yeah. Man. Well, I think it's really cool and different. Now, you guys improved to 8-1-2 on the season with a 3-0 shutout win over Oakland yesterday. Now, you guys are now 8th in the nation. 8th in the nation. And 14th in the coaches poll. Mm-hmm. The 8th is the RPI, right?
Yes.
I got to ask you, how good can this team be?
I mean, Indiana won the national championship last year. I would say we're pretty similar to them. I mean, the sky's the limit right now. We're playing, you know, pretty good soccer right now. We're really consistent. Even our game against Ohio State when we tied, you know, we're the better team, created tons of chances. So I'd say we're only getting better at, you know, as the season goes on. And you know, I really like where we are and where we're, you know, we could go.
Now, Adam, you told me before we hit the air, I mean, this is the first time in quite a long time that this MSU soccer team has been ranked at all, let alone this high. Mm-hmm. I mean, what's that say about this program? And is it shocking for you all? Has it hit you guys yet that, I mean, you guys are nationally ranked now. Michigan State is making some noise.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is where we've wanted to be. You know, I mean, getting these rankings, getting these recognitions, you know, we're putting a target on our back, and this is where we want to be. You know, it just increases the pressure. I mean, it makes it more fun. You know, the better you are, the more people are going to come to games. It just makes playing college soccer even better.
Gotcha. So you don't look, because I know some teams, I mean, if you look at the MSU men's basketball team, Izzo has always said, I mean, this could be a blessing and a curse to be ranked that high. I mean, the MSU basketball team, if you look at every preseason poll, 1 and 2, for any team to be ranked that high and to go through the season, I mean, it kind of creates an expectation.
Yeah,
is that a little scary? You know what I mean? Or do you like having that target on your back?
I'd say we like it. I mean, we've been at, you know, both sides of the spectrum where, you know, we haven't been getting respect. We've been fighting to get respect, and now that we've got the respect, you know, we've got to, you know, show what, you know, what why we deserve it. So I'd say if anything, it just makes us work harder and we're even more determined.
So even with this ranking, there's still that chip on the shoulder, right?
Definitely, definitely. I'd say we're a blue collar program, and I mean, that's what we're going to stick to. I mean, this ranking, you know, might put a target on our back, but, you know, it just makes every game that much better.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just now joining us here on Current Sports, I'm sitting down with MSU soccer player, outstanding player, Adam Montague. So, Adam, you guys right now are rolling 8-1-2 now with that win over Oakland. Where do you see improvement coming for this team? What do you guys have to work on?
I would say doing the small things, like we talked about earlier, as long as we stay, you know, stay true to, you know, not trying to overcomplicate the game, work hard. I mean, we're a very talented team. You know, as long as we're working hard, we're going to, you know, a lot of the time be the better team on the field. So if we work hard and do the small things, I mean, we're going to win a lot of games.
Now, how is Damon's coaching technique? I got to ask, because he seems like a real, you know, when I see him in the pressers, he's real chill, laid back to the point. You know, is he a fiery guy, or is he kind of just a chill coach that just says, "Hey, go out there and get it done"?
Depends. It depends when you catch him. I mean, he can fire you up. You know, he's not going to shy down. You know, he'll tell you, you know, to your face what he thinks. You know, but it, I mean, at the same time, everyone loves playing for him. You know, first and foremost, he's a fun guy to be around. You know, he can talk to us. You know, almost like a father figure on the team. You know, no one's afraid of him or anything. So it's you know, I'd say it's a positive thing because he's a guy you want to play for. He's a guy you want to fight for.
What's something people out here listening right now to this show don't know about Damon Renting?
Ooh, that's a tough question. I'd say everyone sees him as a nice, funny guy, but you know, if you make him mad, you know, you can see a different side of him.
Okay, so that's what it is. So he's fiery. He can be fiery
sometimes.
Oh,
he can, yeah, definitely, definitely. And those pregame speeches, he fires people up.
that's pretty cool stuff. All right, so now you guys host Big Ten leader Penn State this weekend. Huge weekend for you guys. If you guys get this one, you can really, really just, you know, sit nationally that, hey, Michigan State is, they're serious. They're serious about this thing. I mean, how are you guys preparing and what are you expecting from Penn State?
Yeah, like you said, I mean, it's a huge game. You know, if we want to talk about winning Big Ten championships and, you know, looking at the bigger picture, Penn State's going to have to come here. They're going to have to come through us. So they're 3-0 right now. We're still undefeated in the Big Ten, the only two undefeated teams. So this weekend's going to be a huge game. I'd say, you know, as long as we stay true to what we've been doing, you know, as long as we work hard, we're going to create tons of chances. And as long as we can score, you know, score a goal or two, you know, we've been defensively sound all year. So, I mean, honestly, we're more worried about what we're going to do, you know, less and less what they're going to do.
What is the scouting report on them, though? What type of team are they?
Honestly, we haven't even talked about it. You know, yesterday we were so focused on Oakland, and, you know, today we have the day off. So when we come in tomorrow, it's going to be all Penn State, and, you know, I'm sure they'll have us ready to go.
So it's truly game by game, right?
It is game by game. I mean, if you go in our locker room, we have a sign that says biggest game of the year, and the next game is the biggest game of the year.
Right, baby steps. That's how you got to take it, right?
Exactly.
I mean, that's gotta, exactly. It's cliche, but that's how you got to take it.
Very true.
So I got to ask you, Adam, how is the chemistry between you guys? Are you guys, I mean, throughout, comparing it to, you know, the previous years that you have been with this MSU soccer team and looking at this season, is the chemistry pretty tight compared to the other seasons?
Yeah, I mean, if you see us on the field, you might see a disagreement and argument, but at the same time, you know, you'll see us joking around on and off the field. I'd say this year more so than others, you know, it's, you can connect, you know, the older guys to the younger guys, where in years past, you know, there might be, you know, some different cliques or groups just based on age, which happens, you know, with teams. I'd say, you know, everyone's pretty close, you know, regardless of age, everyone gets along, you know, can joke with just about anybody on the team.
As a leader, I mean, how do you go about, you know, motivating and getting this team, making sure they're ready each and every game? I mean, what's your leadership technique?
Honestly, some guys joke with me about it, but, you know, I say, you know, think back to what, you know, why you play soccer, you know, and before every single game, I say the same thing. I say, let's have fun today. You know, and I think when you think of it like that, you know, it makes the game easy. You know, you're not worried about making a mistake or, you know, making a bad play. When you just go out there and remember why you played soccer in the first place, you know, that's, you just play free.
It's a great message. I mean, that's a great message. I mean, we all start playing sports for a reason. You got to think back to that, or else you'll lose it. You know what I mean?
Yep.
That's a great message, Adam. Now, tell us something people don't know about you. What do people don't know about Adam Montague that the ordinary person wouldn't know?
Ooh, that's another tough question.
What do you like doing around the game? Away from the game.
My one love is basketball.
Get out of here.
Actually,
you can hoop?
I can. I played basketball pretty much my whole life up until my freshman year of high school. I had to quit because of soccer, but I chose my high school because of basketball, my one love.
Really?
Yes.
Were you recruited at all when you were in high school? Or?
Well, yeah, that's kind of the story. I picked my high school because of basketball. I had to meet with the basketball coach. I went to a private high school, so.
Okay. Which high school was it?
St. John's Jesuit.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So a big basketball powerhouse in Ohio. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I chose St. John's based on basketball, and then I kind of realized my freshman year that it wasn't, you know, I was a better soccer player ultimately.
Right, right. So were any schools recruiting you when you were in high school for basketball? Or
No. Unfortunately, my freshman year, one of my buddies that I came in with, his name's Cheetah Morris, actually plays football now at University of Toledo. He played my spot. So, you know, I basically never saw the floor. I played in like 3 games the whole year.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. So you just realized, I mean, that was one of those things, you just realized that, hey, you know, soccer's my thing.
Yep,
you know,
yeah, definitely. I'm thinking about hitting up Izzo for my 5th year. You know, I still think I can play. You know, if it's not here, it'll be somewhere. I'm playing basketball.
Somewhere.
So yeah, exactly.
So that was your first love.
Exactly.
Then. Well, we have something in common, Adam, because I mean, that was my first love. I still play. You still play it? I go to IM West or anything?
Every once in a while. I mean, it's frowned upon just because, you know, you don't want to get hurt, but
right,
I do.
Right.
You know, if you see a, you know, a 6'2" white kid out there dunking, it's probably me.
you can slam it down.
I can throw it pretty hard.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm jealous because I can't slam it down. I'm too short to slam it down. I got hops, but I can touch the rim, but palm it now. I got small
hands.
Yeah,
I can't,
man.
Palm it either.
Yeah, it's tough. But you can still dunk. I mean, you're a tall guy.
Yeah, okay, exactly.
I'm jealous. I'm jealous, man. All right, and when you just recently had a birthday, Adam.
I did.
You turned 21. That's
yes,
big.
Yesterday.
How did you celebrate? You celebrated a victory yesterday and then turned around, and it's pretty cool because you actually got to celebrate with a teammate, right?
Yes, yeah. Kevin Cope, who was one of the co-captains on the team, he also had a birthday yesterday. We shared the same birthday. So mm-hmm. I actually went out to dinner with my parents, you know, and my girlfriend and my roommates. So that was nice, you know, to be able to see them and be able to celebrate them. And then, of course, you know, I had some fun later on with some teammates.
Wow. Great. So, well, happy birthday for you.
Thank you.
You know, one last thing. You know, as the season goes around, what are the expectations for this team about how good you guys can be? What's the ceiling?
Like I said earlier, the sky's the limit, honestly. I don't want to even put a ceiling on it because, you know, we get better every single game. It's scary, you know, the strides we've made even from last year's Big Ten tournament championship team to where we are now. We play a better brand of soccer. I mean, if you come out to a game, check it out. I mean, you'll be impressed. I mean, we can, you know, impose our will on teams.
And the crowd has been pretty well, you know, throughout the season as well. They've definitely been showing up to you guys' games.
Yeah, definitely. I think we had like 2,100 against Ohio State last Sunday. So, I mean, like we said, you know, if you build it, they'll come. You know, as long as we keep winning games, we're going to get more and more fans.
Yeah, and going back to that, I want to bring that up really quick too. I mean, that Ohio State game, you know, a 1-1 tie, you know, not what you guys wanted, not what you guys expected. I mean, but talk about that game. And what was the message after that game?
Yeah, it was unfortunate. I mean, we gave up a goal, you know, with 5 minutes left, and ultimately, you know, had some chances in overtime to win the game, didn't win. You know, I think guys were down for a little bit, but, you know, Damon basically just said, you know, guys, we're still undefeated in the Big Ten. You know, we haven't lost in our last 8 games. You know, we still got a chance here. Penn State has to come to us. Mm-hmm. So I'd say everyone's really fired up, and, you know, we have a short memory.
Getting that 1-1 tie against Ohio State, did it feel like a loss?
Yeah, definitely felt like a loss. I mean, we had the game, you know, and they kind of came in the last 5 minutes and stole it from us. You know, we created tons of chances. I think we had 36 shots, which was a season high.
Yeah.
We created the chances, we just didn't execute, you know, well enough.
That's the way it goes. Well, Adam, I wish you continued success as the season rolls around. Again, tell the folks out there, when is the next game? Who's it against? Pretty big game.
Sunday,
right?
Penn State, 1:30.
Tell them to come out, right?
Yeah, it's a huge game. Definitely try to come out.
Well, there you have it. Adam Montague, MSU men's soccer player. Again, they will host Big Ten leader Penn State this weekend. Go ahead out to DeMartin Stadium and check them out, all right? Well, there you have it. MSU men's soccer player Adam. Hey, we got to do this again, all right?
Thank you.
And happy
Appreciate
belated
it.
Birthday, all
Thank
right, brother?
You.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to chat with a man, Greg Easterbrook. We supposed to have him on yesterday. Scheduling conflicts happened, but we have him today, folks. We'll take a quick break, come right back, and dive into that interview. Don't go anywhere. More Current Sports is coming right back at you.
Meghna Chakrabarty. Next time on Here and Now, a study from UC Berkeley says that the fast food industry costs American taxpayers $7 billion a year. Wages are so low, employees need to rely on Medicaid, food stamps, and more to make ends meet. Also, hundreds of migrants from Africa and Syria are trying to make it to Europe. We'll look at this new refugee crisis that's hitting Italy. That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
That's Here and Now, coming up at 2 p.m.
Every weekday afternoon at 4, All Things Considered keeps you up to date on current events nationally and around the world. I inform you on what's happening at the state and local levels. Hi, I'm Brad Walker, your host for All Things Considered. Join me as we stay on top of the things that matter to you on All Things Considered, weekdays from 4 until 6 on AM 870 WKAR.
Welcome back to Current Sports. Yes, this is your host, Al Martin. As always, a great time here on the show. We just finished talking with MSU men's soccer player Adam Montague. They are coming off a shutout win over Oakland University yesterday, 3-0. And now they have a big challenge in front of them. On Sunday at 2:30 p.m., they will play host to Penn State, yes, Big Ten leader Penn State. And also want to note that the women's soccer team, I believe they play Purdue. Well, they play Purdue actually tomorrow at 4 p.m. And they play Indiana on the 20th at noon. So definitely don't want to forget about the MSU women's soccer team. Okay, well, let's shift gears right now for just a sec. I now have the privilege of welcoming a man who is the author of the very popular ESPN column, Tuesday Morning Quarterback. He is also he has a new book out entitled The King of Sports, Football's Impact on America, Greg Easterbrook. Welcome to Current Sports. How you doing, Greg?
Just fine, Al.
That's great. Well, great to have you on. We tried to get you on yesterday. Scheduling conflicts happens, right?
Well, yes, it does. Here I am.
Welcome to the show. Thank you so much. Well, first of all, Greg, where did the inspiration to write this book come from?
Well, people, you know, I've written a ESPN column on football for a long time, and people have said, when are you going to write a book? And I thought, what could I write that hasn't already been written? There have been many good books about coaches, teams, players, etc. Then I realized that what had not been written was a book about the overall impact of football on American society. So that was the genesis for The King of Sports.
Now, from the Boston Globe, Greg, they write that, quote, Easterbrook notes the NFL's disregard for player welfare, both at the team and the league level. He cites physical risks taken by players and downplayed by teams looking to exploit them for profit. Can you talk a little bit about that and your stance on the whole NFL sentiment about concussions in sports, Greg?
Well, nobody wants NFL players to get hurt, and I think the NFL is grudgingly, finally doing things to improve its safety standards. But there's only 2,000 NFL players. The majority of the physical harm done by football happens at the youth and high school level because that's where most football is played. And the victims of that harm are legally children. NFL players are adults. They make informed decisions about risk, and they're very well paid for the risks that they take. The situation is different when you talk about youth and high school players who may not really understand what they're getting into, mm-hmm. who do benefit in some ways from playing football. I played football in high school, and my sons did. I'm glad for all of that. But yet, I think the spreading awareness of the risks, and especially the long-term neurological damage, what we're learning about that from multiple helmet-to-helmet impacts, I think it really ought to give one pause.
Yeah, without a doubt. Now, do you think the game is doing enough to alleviate concussions?
At the NFL level, like I said, symbolically they're not doing the right things. And, hey, that's a big improvement from where they were just 5 years ago when they were denying that concussions were even an issue. Mm-hmm. I think the NFL could do a lot more. I think the rules have to get a lot more strict. People, you've heard people, including Jerry Rice, say, oh, they're trying to turn it into powder puff football. You know what? That's what people said when the forward pass was introduced. And nobody thinks football with a forward pass is a powder puff game.
Right.
Football will always be very tough and very aggressive. But safety enforcement has to get more strict, not just in games, but in practice. Concussions happen more often in practice because there are more practice hours than game hours.
Now, Greg, how bad do you think this concussion discussion, which is really, you know, just now really starting to get ahead of steam to it compared to years past, how bad do you think this will hurt the game of football, or if it even will hurt it?
Well, I'll tell you where the big risk, if you love the sport, and I do love the sport, I want it reformed, but I think football is a fantastic game. If you love the sport, what you should worry about is litigation about concussions in high school. The NFL, it looks like they've settled their the judge hasn't approved this settlement yet, but probably she will. So it looks like the NFL is off the hook. And anyway, any problem they have, they can solve with money. You look at the high school level, where public high school districts are strapped for funds as it is. If they start losing settlements over neurological damage from football, and the initial losses have been, in just the last 5 years, Colorado one, California another, the damage awards have been far greater mm-hmm. than the average damage award in the NFL case is going to be. Public high schools will stop playing football or they will stop being able to get insurance, which is basically the same thing. And if public high schools stop playing football, where are the players going to come from?
Do you think that will happen? Is it headed down that road right now?
Oh, I think there's a great risk of that. And I think if you want to know what worries the NFL executives at 345 Park Avenue in New York, where the headquarters is, that's what worries them. The public high schools will begin dropping the game, and two things will happen. One, they'll lose their free single-A league. And will create an impression that there is something fundamentally wrong and bad with football.
Mm-hmm. Right. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just now joining us here on Current Sports, talking with Greg Easterbrook. Of course, he is the author of the very popular ESPN.com column Tuesday Morning Quarterback and has a book out entitled The King of Sports, Football's Impact on America. Now, Greg, in your book, you talk about something called, what you call the grand illusion, by which college coaches recruit teenagers with the promise of eventual access to the pros. Now, you cite Nick Saban as one of the most energetic endorsers of the grand illusion, contending that Saban has abandoned the ideal of, you know, selling recruits on, quote, tradition, a fine campus, and a big stadium full of loyal fans, in favor of encouraging them to see, playing for Alabama as a stepping stone to, an NFL contract. Now, can you talk about that? And has recruiting nowadays, Greg, gone a little too far?
oh, I think it's gone way too far. Every 17 and 18-year-old boy coming out of high school is a good football player and is getting recruiting interest, wants to believe he's going to be drafted by the NFL and sign a million-dollar bonus check and buy a fancy car and be chased by beautiful women, etc. That's a fabulous fantasy. What boy wouldn't want to entertain that fantasy as opposed to, I'm going to have to be at the library every night for 4 years and then maybe I'll be able to get a pretty decent white-collar job.
Mm-hmm.
So boys go for this fantasy. It's obvious why they do, but hardly any of them ever sign that contract. The odds of a Division I football factory level player ever receiving a dime from the NFL are 1 in 35, and the odds of staying in the NFL long enough to have anything like what you and I would call a career are about 1 in 100. Mm. Even most of the players at Alabama, the best college team of the last 2 years, most of them will never earn a dime in the NFL. And yet coaches, Saban is real good at it, obviously, but many other coaches create this illusion for their players, you're going to be wealthy in the NFL. If you've got a paper that's due, just skip that paper. Don't go to the library. Be at weightlifting. You're going to be wealthy in the NFL. Mm-hmm. And that is the grand illusion. And it goes down a little bit to high school where boys, any 14-year-old boy would rather believe that he's going to be recruited by Alabama than Ohio State than think that he's got to spend more time on his GPA so that he can get regular admission to college. And that's the high school version of the grand illusion.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, with this grand illusion, Greg, I mean, how can these, you know, high school athletes in a way, you know, can kind of be protected? I mean, because there's only so much you can do, right?
Oh, yes. Ultimately, you, me, we alone are responsible for our actions. And a college kid, a high school kid, ultimately it's against him to take his schoolwork seriously and do well.
Mm-hmm.
But still, you don't want to surround people with the wrong messages. And I'll tell you, in public high school, one of the wrong messages that almost all states are now spending is just in the last 10 years, the majority of states have begun to allow year-round high school football practice. 10 years ago, that was legal in Texas, mm-hmm. Louisiana, and a couple of other states. Now it's legal in almost every state.
Mm-hmm.
So that's increasing the grand illusion for these boys thinking, don't go to the library, go to practice, because you're going to be recruited, and the odds are that you are not.
Right. That's so, so true. Greg, we actually we have a caller for you. He wants to talk about he wants to ask you about the concussion settlement. How you doing? Welcome to Current Sports.
Actually, it's a little different than that, but I'm good. How are you?
Great.
I teach law, and one of the aspects we get into are waivers. So I'm curious, there are a couple things I want to talk to you about. One, you mentioned reform. And I don't know if you're talking about reform insofar as practice hours, et cetera, or if you're talking about reform with regard to technique and things that can be taught differently. If the latter, what are your suggestions and why isn't that reform taking place right now? That's my first question. The second question is, I don't know if you touch upon in your book this matter of redshirting in high school, but I'd be interested in finding out what your thoughts are on holding. I think the description is holding back to get ahead. If you have any thoughts on that, I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you for your call.
Those are two good questions. First, practice for high school. 1.1 million boys and a handful of girls play at the high school football level, and as I noted, most states in the last decade have begun to allow year-round practice. That's just wrong. Football should go back to being a sport, a one-season sport, where you practice in the summer and you play in the fall, and then as soon as the snow falls, depending on where you are in the country, but as soon as Christmas comes, then you go on to other things, you play a different sport, you do extracurriculars, you make yourself a well-rounded person. Every state has some kind of sanctioning body for high school sports. Some states have just one, some have two, one for public, one for private. And those sanctioning bodies have to take their responsibilities seriously and cut back the amount of time that the boys are spending at football. I had a good interview with Tony Dungy for my book, The King of Sports,
mm-hmm.
and I said, what would you change about football if you could change anything? He said, one of the things I would change is we need time away from the game. Football is great, but it's too much of a good thing. Boys should just not be spending their entire childhood in one version or another of a football fantasy. They should be becoming well-rounded, and the adults have to take responsibility for that. Now, the other question that your caller asked about redshirting, or the high school level, we're calling it gray shirting these days.
Mm-hmm.
Redshirting usually is meant for college. Yeah, parents wanting to hold their kids back. It's not just in athletics. Some parents want to hold their kids back for a year for academic reasons, or if their kids are good at music, on the theory that by the time they're seniors, they'll be a year older, more mature than the other kids and doing better. And that's another illusion, isn't it? Of course a boy who's 1 year older than his competition is going to look a little bit better, but once he gets out in life, everybody's going to be equal. And if you think your parents are going to pull some stunt to get you ahead, wow, you got another thing coming, don't you?
That's very, very true. That's a fact of life right there, Greg. Now, I want to ask you this question, Greg, because it's certainly been a hot topic, and, you know, in light of the whole, especially the Johnny Manziel, you know, signing autographs for money, quote unquote. I want to ask you, do you think college athletes should be paid?
I don't, although I do think I agree with the APU movement. If your listeners have seen those guys wearing APU on their wristbands,
mm-hmm.
I agree that the $3,000 to $5,000 stipend should be offered to all Division I football players, because that way it would pay their full cost of being at college. You go to college, you got travel expenses, textbooks are surprisingly expensive. The college should pay all that. So I agree with the stipend request. I don't think there's any scheme of paying players outright where what they would receive as pay would be more valuable than a college diploma. What really scandalizes me about big college football is 55% graduation rate in Division I. A college diploma adds $1 million to your lifetime earnings. There is no possible scheme where college players will be paid more than $1 million on average. Johnny Manziel, he's probably worth $10 million. Mm. But what about the other 84 guys on scholarship at Texas A&M? Most of them are not worth anything at all. So if you try to distribute the money to everybody, they might get 10, they might even get $20,000 a year. And to a 19-year-old, that sounds great. But compared to the value of the diploma, it's chump change. So I think the reforms have to focus on getting guys to graduate.
Definitely. So there should be a stipend, but no to the athlete being paid.
Yeah, I think that would just make the situation even more cynical and unpleasant.
Right. Greg, before I let you go, what are your thoughts? You know, I want to shift to the NFL really quick. I mean, what are your thoughts on the NFL right now, and who are your Super Bowl favorites?
Oh, my sir, how can you not like the Denver Broncos? But I would tell you, just because the football gods have a sense of humor, the fact that the Broncos are so good right now means that somebody else is going to win at the end. Nobody would have guessed Baltimore Ravens in October of 2012.
Right.
I continue to be very impressed with the Seattle Seahawks, so they were flat in the last game that they played. I think that's a very deep, strong roster. I would not choose them as my opponent.
Right, definitely. So Denver, but you never know, because you know it's NFL. Like you said, I mean, last year with the Ravens, no one would have guessed that. So, and also, you know, with a local feel here, we're in Michigan. Have you watched the Lions at all, and what are your thoughts on the Lions?
The Lions, they're like the housing market. They're so up and down, you never know what you're going to get. When they're up, they are a very entertaining team. When they're down, boy, you want to go rake the leaves. So if the Super Bowl was Denver versus Seattle, it'd be offense versus defense. I think that'd be very exciting.
Now, you know, Greg, Dominican Sue, I don't know if you saw it today, but he has been fined yet again. $31,500 for his hit on Cleveland Browns quarterback Brandon Whedon, which I looked at it and I didn't think it was a big deal, but I just think his reputation is kind of following him now. I mean, what are your thoughts on Ndamukong Suh about, you know, this whole being a dirty player? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think he is a dirty player. Mm-hmm. He's also a fabulous athlete, but as you say, he got himself a reputation. He made jokes about trying to hit people after the whistle. You know, he punched a guy in the back of the neck a couple of weeks ago. Refs find out about that. The league finds out about it. He is certainly not the only dirty player in the NFL, but he's the highest profile dirty player, and he's got to grow up about it.
Gotcha. All right, Greg, before I let you go, what do you want people to take away from your book, and how can they get it?
Well, it's in any bookstore. You know, there are these places called bookstores, Al, you can actually go into where there are books on stacks and
really?
Pick the one you want. Yeah, it's hard to believe, isn't it? Yeah, and there's, of course, also on Amazon, but you can get it anywhere, and it's a book for anybody who loves the game but wants to see it reformed.
Definitely. Well, there you have it. Greg Easterbrook, author of the ESPN.com popular column, Tuesday Morning Quarterback, and of the King of Sports, Football's Impact on America. Go get it, people. Greg, thanks so much for joining me. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, Al.
All right. Well, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk Tigers. Yes, it's a back and forth boxing match, people, as the Tigers tied up the ALCS. Up at 2 games apiece last night. Give us a call and express your thoughts on the Tigers. 517-355-9527. If you do, you will automatically be entered in our drawing to possibly win two MSU football tickets to this weekend's MSU-Purdue football game. 517-355-9527. Don't go anywhere. Current Sports will be right back.
Get your motor running. Head out on the highway. Looking for adventure. And whatever comes up.
Hello, this is Fernando Lamas. I'd like to talk to David Steinberg, please.
On the next Fresh Air, Billy Crystal talks about his career in comedy. He turned 65 this year and has a new memoir called Still Foolin' Him.
The original title of this book was Everything Hurts.
Join us for the next Fresh Air.
That's Fresh Air coming up at 3 o'clock. Welcome back to Current Sports. As always, I'm your host, Al Martin. Well, what a day. Packed day. We just finished talking with Greg Easterbrook. He has a new book out entitled The King of Sports, Football's Impact on America. Of course, Greg is also the author of the popular ESPN.com column, Tuesday Morning Quarterback. And before Greg, we had Adam Montague, who is MSU men's soccer player, and he's been, you know, creating quite a buzz in the world of college soccer. He was named Big Ten Offensive Player of the Week last week, had a header for a win in double overtime against number 5 Northwestern last week as well. Such a great guy. Again, they have Penn State coming up, a huge game. Penn State, the leader in the Big Ten in men's college soccer right now. They will go at it against Penn State this Sunday, so definitely check that out for those in the mid-Michigan area. Well, let's talk Tigers really quick. The Detroit Tigers, they beat the Boston Red Sox 7-3 on Wednesday night to even the American League Championship Series at 2-2. Austin Jackson, yes, he is awakened from the dead. Austin Jackson finished with 2 singles and 2 walks. He was 3-for-33. Yes, 3-for-33 with 18 strikeouts in his postseason before Wednesday. Now, much talk was of Jim Leland's shakeup of the batting order, in which Leland dropped Austin Jackson to 8th in the batting order, hoping to relax the slumping Detroit outfielder. Now, Leland moved the slumping Jackson out of the leadoff spot and bumped almost everyone else up a place following the Tigers' 1-0 loss in Game 3. Now, the Detroit manager was quick to deflect credit afterwards, saying, quote, "This has nothing to do with Jim Leland. This is all about the players. They executed, they came out, and they played well." Now, Doug Fister, meanwhile, provided another fine outing for Detroit. He allowed a run in 6 innings, and the Tigers' starting pitchers have yielded only 3 runs. This is just a sick stat right here. 3 runs in 27 ALCS innings and struck out 42. Now, after blowing a 5-0 lead in Game 2, Detroit kept the Red Sox at bay on Wednesday. Now, Game 5 is tonight in Detroit. The Tigers' Anibal Sanchez faces Boston's John Lester in a rematch of Game 1, which Detroit won 1-0. Now, Leland indicates his batting order will remain the same in Game 5. But will he do anything special with the lineup card from Wednesday's game? Jim Leland went on to say, quote, "I'll throw it away unless I can sell it to some bar on the way home." So Leland indicated his batting order will remain the same in Game 5. So, he's not making any changes, folks. Of course, I'm joined by Matt Luckey right now. Matt, let's dive into this game. Very impressive outing for the Tigers. They finally woke up, I tell you that. That move, moving Austin Jackson to the eighth spot in order to, we talked about this before the show, in order to relax him. And it's so ironic because Jim Leland did it to relax him, hoping that, you know, he's in the eighth spot. Maybe he'll chill out a little bit and just get his mind wrapped around when he's, you know, when he comes to the plate. The first time he comes to the plate, the bases are loaded. I'm sitting there dying laughing at the quote he had before the game. And, it works out for him. He gets a walk. Tigers score. Boom, he's on base. So it was really impressive, though, I tell you, because Austin Jackson, he goes 2-for-2. 2 RBIs. A double. 2 walks. Run scored. Even stole a base. I don't know who I was watching yesterday. It was a totally different player that I've been waiting for Austin Jackson to wake up, and he finally did. And, a lot of credit to Jim Leland for shaking up things a little bit.
Yeah, and, Torii Hunter hadn't, let off the lineup since 1999. Miguel Cabrera hadn't batted second since 2004, almost 10 years and 50 pounds ago, you know?
Right.
It was just a different look from the Tigers, and I think it just got everybody going. And like you said, Jackson comes in with the bases loaded. Luckily, at that point, Jake Peavy had already pretty much imploded.
Right.
He was terrible last night.
He was bad, man.
He could not locate anything. He had a 54% strike rate, which is the third worst of his career.
Wow, it was a really...
So he clearly had a bad night.
Yeah, it wasn't Peavy. It wasn't usual Peavy.
At all. And you know, he was all out of sorts, and you know, the only guy who really didn't do much was Prince Fielder.
Exactly. You know, and that's why I want to bring up, because Fielder, he gets a pass right now. He's getting a pass because his teammates are picking him up, and you kind of just kind of forget that, you know, Prince...
Has zero RBIs in the playoffs.
Zero RBIs. You know, and you know, last night, he grounded to third... then had a ground out with a man on first. He had a strikeout with a man on second, a fly ball to center. And then afterwards, he didn't want to talk about it afterwards. He was so frustrated. But this $23 million bat is going to have to wake up at some point. And they're going to need Prince Fielder to step up, because right now, there's not going to be days where, you know, his teammates can lift him up and get hits the way they did last night. At some point, Prince Fielder is going to have to wake up, or is going to end up biting the Tigers in the butt.
Yeah, you know? Right now he is a wet blanket in the middle of the lineup.
Exactly. He's just there.
Yeah, but I mean, putting them 1-2-3, it's kind of like the Little League strategy of putting your best three hitters at the top of the order, and it paid off. And, you know, Jackson, whether it was because he was batting eighth or just the flow of the game, he definitely seemed more comfortable. And when you walk on four pitches to start it out, you get on base, you score a run, you know, you get that RBI. You could tell it got him going. He looked more confident. He wasn't taking, you know, terrible swings at everything. You know, he actually drew two walks. He actually, you know,
two walks,
didn't
man.
Swing at pitches. You
that's
know?
That's patience. That's analyzing where the pitches are coming from. I mean, that's having good at-bats.
It's more productive in that game than he has been in the entire playoffs so far.
Right.
And that's the kind of, you know, big steps up that you need from everybody. It's not just going to be Cabrera winning you the game. And like I said yesterday, they needed to find ways to generate runs without hitting towering home runs, and that's exactly what they did. And look at the result. You know, they have a five-run inning where everybody gets involved. The whole team feels good.
Right.
Fister feels more comfortable.
And it happened early. This wasn't panic mode.
Right
off the bat. And they needed that from a confidence standpoint, because once you get runs like that and you build up a lead like that, because in all honesty, right now the Tigers are in a tremendous situation. I mean, last night's game was the critical game that you had to win, in my book, when I look at it. Because, you know, if you lose that, I mean, Tigers are done for the series.
Yeah.
It's over. It's a wrap. Tigers were not going to the World Series, because that game was so critical. Now you're looking at a best-of-three series. Things are tied now. And looking at the lineup now, I mean, you got Anibal Sanchez tonight. After that, you got Max Scherzer, who I think is going to be the Cy Young winner.
Mm-hmm.
Then you got JV. JV is JV in the playoffs. I mean, those are three solid pitchers that you have coming up for the next three games. And, you know, it's got to do a lot for your confidence. But, you know, if they can keep up this consistent hitting, we'll see. You know, one of those days where Peavy had a bad night, the bats were hot, that the bats are going to have to continue to, you know, to generate runs as time goes on. And last night it was a great job from him. And, you know, who knows if Jackson, I hope this isn't a once-in-a-lifetime type of game for him. Hopefully, you know, Leland shaking up this lineup and putting Jackson in eighth does relax him. You know, game by game, and you know, we start to see a different result from him. I hope this is a turning point for him. We can only hope so. But going back to Prince, though, Prince right now is the X factor for this team, I think. Prince has to – this has to change. This has to change. You're paying this guy $23 million. He goes out there. He's a great regular season player. Don't get me wrong. Prince is my favorite player on the Tigers in the regular season. But the playoffs, he just hasn't produced. He hasn't produced. You cannot go out there – ground outs and fly balls, strikeouts. I mean, it looked like
they're at key times.
At
you
key
know,
moments.
He'll get hits. You know, he had an all right average, but it never when it mattered.
Right, exactly.
Never
exactly.
When he had runners on. Never when, you know, it was a RBI potential play. You know, he never had that big clutch hit. He's still waiting to break through there.
Right. In all honesty, I mean, if you look at that game last night too, it looked like when he would take the plate, he looked kind of just confused.
Tentative.
At some points.
It's
he was second-guessing himself out there. I you saw it too.
He's definitely in his head.
Right, you could tell. I mean, he's reaching that. There was one pitch, one ball came at him where he just kind of hesitated and just went on the way through. I'm like, okay, Prince is not Prince. Something's going on here. And like you said, I mean, after the press conference, after the game, he didn't want to say much after the presser. Didn't really, you know, have any notable quotes discussing his struggle at all. He knows he has to change things. It's just about, I think it's in his head now. And that's kind of scary because once you let the game of baseball enter your mind where you're doubting yourself when you approach that plate, you're beat already.
Especially in a game like yesterday where they were clearly knocking Peavy around.
Right.
You know,
oh, yeah.
It's not like he was doing anything well last night. I mean, you know, 54% strikes, 7 earned runs in 3 innings.
Right, exactly.
I mean, 5 hits and 3 walks.
Yeah, I mean, that's got to be frustrating.
He couldn't hit anything, and Prince was still just getting beat.
And, you know, it's got to be, you know, a shot to your confidence as well. I mean, when you see your teammates going out there and having all that success, and you go up there and you're struggling, and you're sitting there like, I can't even get anything going. My team rosters are hitting everything on PV. I'm coming to the plate, and I'm looking like an average player.
Right.
You know,
I make 10 times more.
Exactly.
Money
This is a $23 million bet you're talking about here, and I can't do this. And my teammates are just showing me up, kind of. It's definitely a shot to his confidence. But you know, as the season goes on, it's not gonna be every night where you're gonna get this consistency, you know, because we've seen it. The Tigers have the tendency to go cold a lot of games, and you're gonna need them.
And we're not gonna see the Red Sox this bad.
No,
because it wasn't just Peavy. I mean, Pedroia had some missed plays, and you know, they seemed off. I don't know why Farrell left Peavy in as long as he did.
Right.
Especially after he walks in a run in the second inning.
Yeah.
You'd think that he'd, you know.
Yeah, make a change.
Make a change. Try and stop the bleeding, so to speak, but. Yeah. But he left him out there, and, I mean, they paid for it. But
Right.
You know, you're not going to see the Sox be as bad as they were last night.
No.
It was nice to see a game that didn't come down to one run.
Yeah, I know, right? You know, I couldn't believe, you
How
know.
Scared were you in the ninth when Benoit came out and David Ortiz hits that ball?
I was so
Did you think
nervous.
It was gone?
I did.
I thought I had a shot.
It was a moment in my mind. I'm like, oh, my gosh. And then I kind of calmed down when things settled in. But, you know, it was great because, you know, I was, of course, filming of Current Sports TV last night. And I got home, you know, probably around the second inning. And I'm on the phone with a friend of mine. And he's watching the game. And, you know, it was the moment where Austin Jackson was at play. And I'm sitting there talking trash like, oh, Austin Jackson's terrible. You know what I mean? He was like, the bases are loaded, man. I'm like, oh, gosh. Well, he's striking out. And he got the walk and the Tigers scored. And then, you know, I'm still on the phone with him. He's like, oh, the Tigers just scored again and again and again. I'm like, what inning is this? This is the second inning?
It's just kept coming.
Yeah.
They got to him early.
It's one of those moments where, and I think it's good for the Tigers, definitely in a series like this where you have a battle like this. I mean, it says a lot. It does a lot for the confidence of the team once you get runs early, because then you can kind of relax a little bit. You settle into your game and you just go out there and play baseball. And I think that's what the Tigers need. They need it, especially in a game like this. But now, like I said, best of three now. Three unbelievable pitchers. You got the ERA champ, probably the Cy Young winner, and JV. You know what I mean? You got three starting pitchers who bring it. You got to produce hits though, and you know, if you're a Tigers fan, you got to be feeling good though.
Do you think they win?
I think they do.
You think they win tonight?
I think they do win tonight. I think they do.
I kind of do too. I'm a little scared about Sanchez and just that it's a very key game.
Mm-hmm.
He's still a young player.
Yeah, he is. He's a great player. I mean, the ERA champ, you know.
He's played so well this season.
Right.
But I'm just scared that, you know, the Tigers starters have been so good the entire playoff run.
Yeah.
Sooner or later, somebody's got to get knocked around a little bit.
You think it might be tonight?
I think it might be tonight.
You think Tigers going to lose tonight?
I think it would be more likely that it's Sanchez than Scherzer or Verlander. I don't know if it – I don't think it's going to happen tonight.
Oh, you don't think it's going to happen
tonight? I don't think it's – but of the three pitchers – I think he's the most susceptible to a bad night.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, Scherzer has been so good.
Just lights out.
The man.
Yep.
Mr. Cy. I'm saying it right now. And JV in the playoffs, I mean, you've seen it. I mean, the Tigers got to get run support, but he's been great. But, yeah, I mean, if out of those three, Sanchez is definitely, you know, the third man on the pole right now. And he's got to, you know, we'll see. I do think they get the win tonight, though. It'll be a good game.
It will be a good game. So, probably a one-run game again. Drama.
Probably. Yeah, drama, man. So, again, if you want to comment on the Tigers, call in 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. If you call in, you will automatically be entered in our drawing for two football tickets to this weekend's MSU-Purdue football game. Also want to note that Midnight Madness. You know, Matt, I meant to send an email last night to you guys and to see if you want to go to Midnight Madness, man, to cover it. How's that sound?
Sounds great.
We'll be there. Current Sports will be there Friday night, bringing you all the action. Of course, you can see the footage on Current Sports TV next week as I sit down with MSU head athletic trainer Sally Nogle. Again, Wednesday night, we film every Wednesday night. It was a great time with Carlton Ballantyne. Catch Current Sports TV tonight and see that episode with Carlton Ballantyne. It was very deep episode, talking about his relationship with Denzel and Drew. You know, him playing at MSU back in the 80s. It was a great episode. Tonight at 10 p.m., yes, I know Scandal's on, ladies. Well, fellas, too. I love Scandal. But 10 p.m., it airs the same time. Matt's shaking his head. He hates Scandal. Tonight, well, he haven't watched it yet.
I have no opinion of Scandal. It's just funny.
Tonight at 10 p.m., WKAR-TV, tune in. Well, I'll breeze through, you know, the headlines, and we'll get to a quick throwback Thursday. Time is certainly flying on this show. Of course, the Dodgers and Cards. The Dodgers topped the Cards yesterday 6-4. The series shifts back to St. Louis for Game 6 on Friday night with ace Clayton Kershaw scheduled to start for L.A. against rookie Michael Waka. When those two squared off in Game 2, the Cards won 1-0 on an unearned run. So the Dodgers, they're hanging on by a thread here. St. Louis, they still lead 3-2 in the best of seven playoff series. And as we mentioned in the Greg Easterbrook interview just a minute ago, and Dominican Sue has been fined again, the Detroit Lions defensive tackle was fined $31,500 for a hit on Cleveland Browns quarterback Brandon Whedon last Sunday. Sue hit Whedon twice on Sunday on a video on NFL Evolution.com, one of the league's official websites. Vice President of Officiating Dean Bladino said he wanted to look into a hit by Sue on Whedon where he lowered his head into the QB while making a hit. So they said, yeah, it wasn't a good hit. You're fine. So what's new there? Darren Helm, Patrick Eaves, the Detroit Red Wings could be 2-4 stronger within 10 days as both Darren and Patrick appear ready for activation. Late Tuesday night, the Wings assigned Helm to the minors. The best indication yet that he has gained real ground on the comeback trail. Now, General Manager Ken Holland told the Free Press, Detroit Free Press today, that he'll be in Grand Rapids on Friday to see Helm play against the Milwaukee Admirals. We'll see how that pans out. Now, Helm and Eaves were put on long-term injured reserve when the season began, which requires a minimum of 10 games and 24 days missed. They are eligible to return on October 26th when the Red Wings host the New York Rangers. Basketball waiting list growing. Fresh off a run of the Final Four, Michigan's basketball team is having trouble handling success. Well, the ticket office, at least. After selling 1,500 more student tickets more than were available in September and having to rearrange the student season ticket policy, the waiting list for seats continues to grow. I guess that's a good problem there. Oregon Ducks, no stranger to wild uniform choices, will wear something that's bold even for them this weekend. Yes, they will rock pink helmets. Yes, pink helmets, folks, in an effort to support October's Breast Cancer Awareness Month. The Ducks will rock the pink helmets in Saturday's game versus Washington State. I also think they're donning the pink gloves and pink socks to go with that. So that should be pretty cool. Playoff committee officially announced. Let's speculation of college football's first playoff committee membership in. The committee, which will meet during the season and before bowl season to determine who will be entered in college football's 4-team playoff, has officially been announced. Led by Chairman Arkansas AD Jeff Long, the committee includes legends Tom Osborne, Barry Alvarez, Archie Manning, former Air Force Superintendent, Lieutenant General Mike Gould, current ADs Pat Hardin of USC, Dan Radakovich of Clemson, and Oliver Luck of WVU, former Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice. Yes, I don't know how that happened. Former Big East Commissioner Mike Trangisi. Excuse me, I'm probably pronouncing that wrong. Former NCAA Vice President Tom Jernsnet, and former Notre Dame head coach Tyrone Willingham, and also former football reporter Steve Weinberg. So there you go. Peyton and Ursay. Peyton Manning's Sunday night homecoming in Indianapolis has already generated plenty of buzz based on the matchup alone. With the unbeaten Broncos facing a 4-2 Colts squad, that didn't stop Colts owner Jim Irsay from stirring the pot. Now, Irsay, no stranger to unnecessary headlines, he defended his choice for parting ways with Manning, saying that Peyton said, quote, he'd be crazy not to draft Stanford QB Andrew Luck, and saying he was, quote, disappointed that the Colts not only won one Super Bowl with Manning at the helm. He was disappointed they only won one. Former Colts coach Tony Dungy said Irsay is just trying to knock Manning off his game. Dungy went on to say, I think that's what he's trying to do. Have him make it such a big game, he doesn't perform well. I can't figure any other reason to go this way. Now, while Manning is notorious for huge performances in primetime, another legendary QB says Ursay's strategy may not be too outrageous. Brett Favre. Yes. Quote, not that Peyton needs any advice, but for me, I had never been more nervous and anxious before a game than I was then, said Favre. So being able to think clearly as my emotions were running high was a monumental feat. But he will do fine. So there you have it. Those are your current sports headlines. It's also Thursday, so that means Throwback Thursday. What you got for us, Matt?
All right, Al, before we get to Throwback Thursday,
yeah,
want to jump back to the Sue story.
Yeah. And we talked about that, 2 days ago?
Yeah, let me pose a question to you. Do you think this helps Ndamukong Suh's reputation? Do you think that in the public eye, people watch this replay, see the fine, and think, wow, this guy is being unfairly targeted for stuff that wouldn't be fine-worthy for any other player. He did nothing on that play.
Nothing
the
at
only
all.
Way
there wasn't
you
even a
could
flag
see,
thrown.
The only way you could see that it's helmet-to-helmet is if you just get a still photo.
Right.
When you watch the actual play, you can see he lowers it to not make helmet-to-helmet contact, because that's a flag and a fine and probably a suspension.
Right.
Pushes with his hands, which he does all the time.
All
the
time.
And just knocks people on their butts. He does that. He barely makes contact with his helmet.
Barely.
And then knocks Whedon to the ground.
Exactly. And, you know, when I saw it yesterday, I'm sitting there like, I said on the show yesterday that I didn't think he was going to be fined for it. You know, I think they gave him the benefit of, he shouldn't have been at all. But going back to your question, I think that looking at this, if people look at this hit and look at Ndamukong Suh being fined again, I think that the critics out there, the average fan out there watching is going to side with Suh on this one. I think, you know, now looking at this and looking at the fines he's racked up, and looking at that play, to be fined for that play, I mean, on the play, a flag wasn't even thrown.
Right.
No flag was even thrown. That shows you that the refs there didn't think it was dirty. And then you got this going back and looking at it, and he gets fined. I think right now, the average NFL fan, they know the reputation of Ndamukong Suh. Everyone knows the reputation of Ndamukong Suh. You know, he's known as this dirty player. But this is a little excessive. And I think it sends the NFL definitely screwed this one up. And I hope it gets if the appeal process comes into play here, because I think it's utterly ridiculous. This is just his reputation causing him to get another, dent in his pocketbook.
I agree. And
period.
The one person that, a majority of NFL fans dislike more than Ndamukong Suh is Roger Goodell.
Right.
And this does him no favors.
Not at all.
This plays right. I mean, Suh should kind of be happy that this happened, because it is an egregious example of the NFL just, exercising its power to.
So you think it's a blessing in disguise?
I really think it is. I think he should kind of be happy about this.
And
one.
The NFL's reputation right now is definitely not looking so good, especially with the League of Denial coming out not too long ago.
Exactly.
So, yeah,
I think,
but this is just
I think
ridiculous.
This one's going to work in Suh's favor.
Yeah, this
despite the $31,000.
Right. It's utterly ridiculous. So, yeah, definitely.
All right,
what you got for us, man?
Let's get to Throwback.
Okay.
All right, we'll start out with the Lions, actually. 1943. This is a great one. Detroit Lions set a rushing record when they achieved a negative 53 yards against the Chicago Cardinals.
Negative 53.
Negative 53. Not sure how that happens. 1943.
Oh my gosh, it goes the horror goes back that far.
Yikes.
Oh, okay.
All right. Let's go even farther back. Sticking with football. 1883, a statistical numerical system introduced for scoring football games. Check this out, Al. A field goal worth 5 points, a touchdown, 2 points, 1 point for a safety, and 4 points for making a goal following a touchdown.
Did you say 2 points for a touchdown?
Two.
Wait, who came?
Field goals worth
adopted?
Five.
Was
field goal
adopted?
Was worth five. This was way back in the 1800s.
They play with these rules. You got to be kidding. They thought that kicking was more tough than getting
right.
a touchdown, huh?
So back in the 1880s, those fantasy leagues, first couple rounds, it was all kickers.
You got to get your kicker
early, because those are your big point getters.
Who thought of that, man? I'm glad they changed that.
I am, too.
That brother needs some help.
Definitely glad
to.
All right, let's go. 1999, Dan Marino completes a pass for 8 yards to go over the 60,000-yard mark. That's a pretty impressive milestone.
Mm-hmm.
Couple more here. The New Orleans Jazz in 1974 begin a 28-game road losing streak. That's no
good.
Wow,
that's not good at all. I got that question wrong. They asked about the New Orleans Jazz on Quiz Busters, and I was terrible on Quiz Busters. Let's not bring back the horror. Go ahead.
You'll be better next time. Last one, 1987, the first indoor World Series game. at the Minnesota Metrodome.
Wow, well, there you have it, Throwback Thursday. Great job, Matt. Great. Negative 53 yards. That's terrible.
It's impressive, really.
Yeah, I guess impressive, but it's terrible. You know, it's at the same time. Well, before we leave, special thanks to everyone that contributed to today's episode of Current Sports. Production assistants Alex Sharg and Matt Lucky. Engineer Aaron Young. Shout out to Aaron. Peter Wharf, our station manager here at WKAR. Thanks to Adam Montague and Greg Easterbrook for joining me today. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR East Lansing and WKAR FM HD3 East Lansing. As always, take care, stay dry, it's raining out there. Have a fantastic day and be easy, people.